On WIPR, we're on the record. I'm Sheila Cass. Good morning. Critics of Vincent Schiraldi, including Republicans in the legislature, had been calling for him to be fired almost since Governor-elect Wes Moore appointed him in early 2023. Schiraldi brought a long resume of advocacy for juvenile justice reform, a time as administrator of Washington, D.C.'s Youth Rehabilitation Services, and several top positions in New York City's Corrections Department. When critics said Schiraldi focused on rehabilitating young offenders over holding them accountable, Governor Moore defended him, until he didn't. Here's part of what the governor told Tom Hall on midday on June 10th.
I'm encouraged that we have seen just historic drops within violent crime, where we are now seeing the lowest crime rates that Maryland has seen, when it comes to homicides, non-fatals, that they lowest they've been in a decade. And I'm encouraged by what we've seen so far. I know that we just need to move faster and we need to do more. And so I call for his resignation, and I'm excited to move forward in a future where we know that we'll have new leadership at DJS.
Schiraldi has turned DJS over to his successor, Acting Secretary Betsy Fox Tolentino, who was Managing Director of Young Adult Justice Initiatives at ROCA, and he's with me in the studio to talk about his time at DJS and what's ahead. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Move faster, do more. Sounds a bit like move fast and break things in the tech world. Was there a particular point on which you and Governor Moore did not see eye to eye?
Not really. We were very sort of in lockstep around what should happen. We needed more accountability. We needed more rehabilitation. We needed juvenile crime to go down. There might have been a difference in emphasis as to what priorities were, but wasn't that we disagreed on any fundamental point.
So why did you leave?
So I've now been in mass incarceration, fighting against it for 45 years, and I've, really had a North Star on that. I think that we lock too many people up in America. I think we lock too many kids up in America, and I think there's a better way to achieve public safety and equity than using more incarceration. And I really was pushing hard to try to get a law changed in Maryland that's one of the worst in the country that automatically tries kids as adults for 33 different kinds of offenses. It's called an auto waiver law. And I felt like I couldn't do as much as I needed to do from the inside, so I needed to come on the outside and be an advocate to get rid of that law.
What kind of crimes are we talking about with this auto waiver?
I mean, one of the biggest ones is possession of a handgun. Now, it is not good for a kid to possess a handgun. It's not good for a lot of adults, by the way, to possess handguns either. But it's not good for kids to possess a handgun. But they get automatically tried as adults, often take 6-8 months for their cases to be resolved. And the most frequent resolution of those cases, 9 out of 10 times, is that they get a case dismissed or they get returned to the juvenile system where they should have been in the first place.
So explain to me why this seems to you such a huge problem that you left DJS over it, you say, because, I mean, it sounds kind of like no harm, no foul. I mean, the kid ends up back in DJS, so he gets what, or she gets whatever DJS can offer.
Yeah, great question. And by the way, there's a couple of reasons. The other reason is we had achieved many of the things I was hoping to achieve. We started up some good programs focused on kids that had gun crimes, that were at high risk of gun violence. We started a neighborhood-based Safer, Stronger Together initiative with the Department of Public Safety and Human Services. So those things just launched. Like that one just had its kickoffs in Hagerstown, Salisbury, and next week East Baltimore. So we had achieved a lot of things. Violent juvenile crime in the state is down 29% this year. So a lot of good things were happening, as the governor pointed out. But this auto waiver bill that makes kids be tried as adults, it affected 2/3 of the kids in my detention system. First, they go to an adult jail, right? So now they learn what you learn in adult jails, which is nothing good. And then they would sit for months and months and months waiting for the very slow adult court process to occur, costing us $20 million a year as a state. And then most of the ones that didn't get their cases dismissed would come back to juvenile court anyway. And what would they be? They would be worse off for their behavior. They would be 6 months separated between their arrest and their treatment. And that was being implemented by me and my department, which meant the stink of that was on me personally, and I could no longer abide that.
Why could you not find a way to give services to whatever supports a kid would get in DJS? Why couldn't that happen while they were still under the purview of the adult court?
Sure, and they did get some things. First of all, some of them were in adult jail, so we would have nothing to do with them. Like, some counties never sent us their kids. Cecil County, if you get tried as an adult, you're pretty much spending the whole time in a Cecil County jail, and you're never coming to my facility for most of the kids. But even the ones that did come, you know, Sheila, if you or me got arrested for something today, let's say we got arrested for a drunk driving, the judge doesn't put us into treatment the day we get arrested. We have to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt that we did the crime we're accused of before the court can start issuing orders about what treatment we go to. Same's true of kids. They have rights. So in my detention facilities, yes, they got school. Yes, they got aftercare programs, but they didn't get into their deep psychological treatment through cognitive behavioral therapy that they would ultimately get if they were sent to one of our facilities until they are adjudicated delinquent, which is the equivalent of convicted, and ordered into that treatment.
It's Vinnie Schiraldi, who just left Maryland government after 2 years as Secretary of Juvenile Services. We're talking about Maryland automatically charging teenagers or even preteens as adults for certain crimes and why he wants to change that. Tell me about a particular case.
Sure. So one case I think most people are aware of was a case that was a horrible robbery committed by a group of kids where one of the kids, an 18-year-old, actually adult, after they got the man down, stomped on his head, right?
I do remember that case.
A lot of people remember that case. And that justifiably caused a lot of alarm because it was alarming. One of the young people in that case was a 15-year-old with no prior adjudications who can be seen on that video that many people watched for half a second grabbing the guy's wallet out of his pocket. Again, not a good thing for a kid to do and a thing that he should be held accountable for and receive whatever proper treatment he receives. Instead, what happened is he was charged with attempted murder for that act. There was a big press conference that the state's attorney in Baltimore City held. And then 6 months later, that same state's attorney's office agreed to return his case to juvenile court after he had been in jail for a few weeks and then in detention for 6 months, and to now have him go to the treatment facility he could have gone to 6 months ago. It's understandable. You can imagine yourself being the victim or the relative of that victim. Let's imagine being the mom of that 15-year-old who's hanging around with older kids, and you're probably worried about that, and now has gotten in trouble with older kids, one of whom's an adult, technically, and you want your kid to get held accountable and you want treatment for him, but instead, for 6 months, he's at jeopardy of being tried as an adult. He's now gone to an adult jail. You're watching what that did to him, right? There's plenty of research on what being in an adult jail does to a kid, but we don't need that research. Just think of it as your child. Just think of it as your nephew. Just think of it as someone you care for and love going to that adult jail. And it's one thing if he was going to get a 20-year sentence and we weren't going to see him and that was the proper punishment. This is a kid who's going to be back out, that we wasted all his time, wasted all his money, sent to an adult jail, who's now going to do worse because of that. And that's one thing. If it happens once, it happens 85% of the time to kids who get automatically charged as an adult. It's unnecessary. We could start them in juvenile court. The prosecutor say, I want this kid to be tried as an adult. The defense attorney could defend it, and the judge, who's a neutral arbiter, could make that decision. But that's not the law in Maryland, and it's the law in most other states in the country.
That would be a judge in adult court.
Oh, no, depends on how the law is written. I think the law this year would have had the kid be in juvenile court, and the juvenile court judge would have heard those arguments and decided whether the kid would be waived out of juvenile court into adult court. You could write it the other way, too.
Prosecutors, as you know, strongly push back against what you're advocating for. And I want listeners to hear how the Department of Juvenile Services looks to Baltimore City State's Attorney Ivan Bates, whom you just mentioned. This was about 15 months ago when he and other officials announced they had arrested and charged 20 youths they said had operated a car theft ring. Bates used the phrase catch and release a half dozen times.
We talk about the frustration of the police going out there, making the arrest, only to be told by someone in DJS, take the kids to their parents. That is not what we're going to stand for any longer. Let's move from catch and release to catch and assess.
What do you say to complaints that DJS doesn't keep young people in custody, doesn't monitor them closely enough, doesn't hold them accountable?
It was an interesting editorial that the Baltimore Sun wrote in October. And they wrote, in 2017, Baltimore saw an uptick in the arrests of juvenile offenders. 2017. Newspaper headlines warned of juvenile crime being out of control. They mentioned several incidents where kids were caught pistol whipping citizens. Given the city's homicide woes, the level of alarm was hardly surprising. But guess what was notably absent from the headlines? There was no call to oust then-Maryland Department of Juvenile Services Secretary Sam Abed or any criticism of then-Governor Larry Hogan, a Republican who was then running for U.S. Senate. Now, here's what makes this particularly interesting, they wrote. In 2017, Baltimore averaged 198 juvenile arrests per month. This year, that average, as of last month, meaning September, was 65.
What is it now, do you know?
It's even lower than that. The juvenile crime is down 14.4% in Maryland this year. It's down 29%, let's call that, for violent juvenile arrests. So juvenile crime is about half what it was a decade ago. And most of that time, we were locking up fewer and fewer kids. In fact, my predecessor closed 5 facilities. There's actually been a slight uptick in the number of kids detained since I got here, mostly kids being tried as adults. So it's about 15% higher than it was when I got here. So I don't know, was it a catch and release program before under Governor Hogan, or did nobody notice it? Or is it really not a catch and release program? Is it a program where we take kids, do the best we can to analyze their risk using a validated risk assessment that is independently validated by the University of Maryland, which we present the data on every single year to the legislature, and then 90% of the kids don't get rearrested, but 10% do, and that's all people like State's Attorney Bates and Fox News talk about. They focus specifically on the failures over and over and over again, leading people to believe that there are only failures. And I think that, you know, bad enough for me, woe is me, who cares? I'm going to be yesterday's news, right? People are going to forget my name in a week. But for the kids, mostly black and brown kids, we have seen as a country what vilifying young black and brown boys and men does. That's how we get mass incarceration, a disastrous policy that sends too many people to prison and neglects our ability to turn people's lives around in ways that actually work.
Lots more to talk about with former DJS Secretary Vincent Schiraldi. We need to take a short break on the record. I'm Sheila Cast. When we're back, the racial dimension of juvenile justice. Stay with us. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. With his departure this month after 2.5 years, Vincent Schiraldi adds the handle Maryland Secretary of Juvenile Services to other previous titles. Head of Washington, D.C.'s Juvenile Justice Agency, Chief of Parole in New York City, and briefly, New York City's Commissioner of Corrections, where he worked to close the notorious Rikers Island Jail. Plus, other jobs as advocate, nonprofit director, and academic. Schiraldi's in studio this morning to reflect on his time at Maryland DJS. You grew up in a working-class family in Brooklyn, New York. How did that put you on track to work in criminal justice?
Well, when I was growing up, it was sort of the beginning of the sort of outsourcing of manufacturing jobs. And my neighborhood was a factory town. And so as those factories started to close, a lot of dads got thrown out of work and they, you know, drifted into alcoholism and abuse of their kids. Didn't happen to my dad. He was a cab driver, but a lot of guys that worked in factories and their kids would start to act out, get arrested, go to juvie. And we knew two things about that. One is it never stopped the next kid from acting out because he wasn't acting out because he would or wouldn't go to juvie. He was acting out because bad stuff was going on at home. And the other thing we knew was when they came out, they were always worse. They always had a reputation to uphold, and they always had this sort of anger and rage that they didn't have going in. And so that was in the back of my head. And then I went upstate to State University at Binghamton and got an internship working at a group home. And I really loved it. I just kind of fell in love with it. I saw that kids needed a male role model. I was, you know, only 22, so it wasn't like I was an older role model. But for some of them, they needed that. They needed their horizons expanded. You know, we went camping. We went to museums. We did things that even kids upstate had never done, even though the camping grounds were right there for them. And that's it. I just kind of stayed with it for the rest of my life.
You are a white guy who has worked at high levels in institutions that are predominantly Black and Latino. Talk about the racial element in juvenile justice.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's one of the more disturbing things that I do think contributes to our ability to, or our willingness, I should say, to lock more kids up as adults. For example, 91% of the kids we send to prison in Maryland are kids of color. And we are second only to the state of Alabama, right? Let me say that again, second only to the state of Alabama in a per capita percentage of our youth that we send to adult prisons. I think part of that is because we as a society continue to be able to do things to Black youth that we would never do to white youth. So as part of my job, we started looking into the history of the Department of Juvenile Services and juvenile justice in Maryland.
Yeah, you have asked, or DJS under you, asked the State Transportation Department to put up highway markers of that history briefly.
Yeah.
Tell us that history.
Yeah, so, you know, in the 1800s, there were no separate systems. You just tried kids as adults, and they went to adult facilities. And in the 1820s, Boston and New York City set up the first separate facilities in the country for kids called Houses of Refuge. And in 1850, Maryland followed suit with the House of Refuge here in Baltimore City that eventually moved to the county and is now the Charles Hickey School. But it was only for white youth. It was a white-only facility. And in 1850, it opened. 22 years later, we opened a Black-only facility down in Cheltenham, Maryland, in Prince George's County. Again, a facility we still run, although it's newly constructed, but it's still called Cheltenham. And so that was 1872. Both of them took about 400 kids each out of adult prisons. The youngest was 5, by the way, when Cheltenham opened up.
Wow.
And the jailers complained that he was so small he could actually literally fit through the bars, right? So now these two facilities open in the 1850s and 1870s. They have 400 kids. They take them out of adult facilities, adult prisons. And it's not till 1961 that we desegregate them because Thurgood Marshall and Juanita Jackson Mitchell sued the state. And there are hundreds of pages of legal documents with the state attorney general and my department defending segregation in the file right now. So 1861, we're talking about 6 years after the Brown Board versus the Board of Education decision. So, you know, it's easy to sort of shake our heads about that, right, and look back at history and say, oh, God, weren't they terrible and racist back then? But 50% of the kids that we pulled out of prison were white and 50% Black. Now, 91% of the kids we're sending today into those prisons at the second highest rate in the whole country are kids of color. So I think part of why you study history and part of why I think some people are trying to erase that history here shortly after Juneteenth, when the president didn't even mention Juneteenth except to say we probably shouldn't have so many holidays so people can work more. Part of why we study that is so we can learn from it and not repeat it. And I would absolutely urge leaders in Maryland today to remember that history, which is why we want to put up road signs and publicize this issue beyond the road signs, so that we stop repeating it.
This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Vinnie Schiraldi, criminal justice advocate, past Secretary of Juvenile Services in Maryland. What are you proudest of having accomplished?
So really, there were two things we did that I think were terrific. One was when I got here, the second day I got here, one of our kids was brutally killed, so brutally killed that we identified him by his electronic monitor. The police actually called us because they couldn't identify the kid. And during that first year I was here, 44 kids were either shot or shot somebody, and many of them were killed. I ran, and we had about 1,800 kids in my caseload, right? I ran probation for New York City. We had 30,000 people on my caseload then, and I didn't have 44 people shoot somebody or get shot. Mm. So gun violence was off the hook when I got here. And I noticed what Mayor Scott was doing with the group violence reduction strategy. Very, very intelligent approach to sort of identifying people who, you know, data and human intelligence said were likely to be involved in gun violence, offering them services, but also telling them, you know, that their behavior could cause them harm, cause harm to their families, or they could go to prison, right? So saying, look, there is a stick out here, but we also have real carrots for you guys. Go this way, don't go that way. So we replicated that in what's called the Thrive Academy. We evaluated 30,000 cases over the past 3 years prior to the launch of the academy, just to tease out what factors suggest a young person would be involved as a victim or an offender in gun violence. And then we put very serious resources into that, that we could send a kid to vocational training. We could help them find a job. If their family and they were in jeopardy, we could relocate them so that the people trying to shoot them weren't there, so that they don't have to carry a gun to protect themselves. We did fun stuff with them. We took them camping. We took them canoeing, take them to museums, so that they can start to see a different world. And then we hook each one of them up with what we call a credible messenger, somebody who has walked in their shoes, grown up in their neighborhood, maybe even had involvement in the criminal justice system, so that they now have a mentor who is also holding them accountable, and they have a bunch of resources. The data is really strong on that. We did it in the four counties that account for 82% of the violence, gun violence in Maryland, Anne Arundel, Baltimore County, Baltimore City, and Prince George's County. We had no kids have been killed. 2% of the kids, about 160 kids have gone through it, have been shot, and 4 out of 5 have not been arrested for gun crime. It's not perfect. It's getting better each month. The numbers are actually improving as time goes on, as we get better and better at it. But that's a damn good start.
What would you do differently if you were starting the job now?
Yeah, so over the last 2 years, every year I did a statewide tour of judges, prosecutors, defense attorneys, law enforcement in every county. So I either went physically to every county or did virtual meetings with all those key stakeholders. I wish I had done that sooner. I think by the time I actually got to meet with people, the media had framed me in such a way that I was digging at it too deep a hole, and I think that was problematic. I remember in one of them, I presented, there was this whole group of judges, and it was this gray-haired guy sitting in the front row, and I was trying to read his, you know, facial expressions and his body language, and I couldn't make out whether he was liking what I was saying, what he didn't like what I was saying. At the end of it, this was a judge. He said, "That was really interesting. I thought I was going to hate you." That's what he said. "I thought I was going to hate you." I was like, "God, you didn't even know me yet." And it was just, I was so depicted by the media as this just crazed liberal, as if mass incarceration was this resoundingly successful public policy that I was some outlier in opposing.
What's next?
I'm going to kayak. I'm going to hike a little. And then I'm going to come back out and pick a fight. I think I really do want to use my voice on the issue of kids being tried as adults. Maryland is just such an outlier in it. We are better than this. Our legislature is better than this. And I think we really need to push further on it. And I think my voice might make a difference. And I'm going to try.
Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Vincent Schiraldi left Maryland government this month after 2.5 years as Secretary of Juvenile Services. We've got more information at the On the Record page at wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. If you missed part of today's conversation, subscribe to the On the Record podcast. Glad you're with us on the record. We'll be back on Wednesday.